everyone. Welcome back to Womansplain. Today we have a very special guest, Julia O'Mara. She is the co-founder and COO of Pickle, an exciting new clothing rental startup. I'm going to pass it to her for a little intro.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
So excited to have you.
It's going to be so fun. very quick intro. Yes, founder, co-founder and COO of Pickle. If you haven't heard of it, it's a peer-to-peer fashion rental app where women are renting their clothes to and from each other. Amazing side hustle for the items in your closet they don't wear all the time. And then, of course, a really good, affordable, sustainable way to wear something once. We've been building Pickle for years now. We launched this rental marketplace in May of 2022, and it's been an awesome journey since then.
It's amazing. I've used it many times. It comes in clutch when you need a dress in 2 hours.
Yes, and it's because if you're in a pickle.
Yeah.
That's the name. That was it. You just pitched it right
there.
That's great. Yeah. We're so excited to have you. Let's start from the very beginning. So what did you study in college, and did you always have this entrepreneurial spirit? Just kind of let's start from that, from there.
Yeah. So I went to Penn undergrad.
Yay.
Go Quakers.
Worst mascot of all time. Literally so bad.
Yeah, I love that we're all alumni, though.
Yeah, that's exactly. Good.
Yeah. So I graduated in 2019. I studied material science engineering there.
Oh, wow.
Very different from, obviously, what I'm doing now, and even very different from what I started to do right after school. And I think when I was in that major, I immediately, very quickly realized that I didn't want to go work in a lab, wasn't that interested in getting my PhD. So I ended up picking up a engineering entrepreneurship minor. And that was kind of my initial foreshadowing of being interested in startups and potentially starting my own company. But to answer the question about if I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit, I'd say I've always had a spirit of I didn't think I was going to follow maybe like the exact path that often a lot of people do when they graduate from Penn, but I didn't always know I wanted to start a company. So this was a little bit more of a leap of faith.
I love that. So you're at Penn, you're studying, I guess you're an engineer.
Yeah, that's a hard degree.
It's really hard. I definitely partied way too much.
I never saw any of my engineering friends.
We were in the library a lot.
I was like, no wonder I feel like I didn't meet you. I don't know. Yeah. I was like, I was definitely not in the same place. I should have studied a lot more, summary for my GPA. So that's great. And then what sort of brought you into being interested in finance as well? And sort of how did you kind of transition into that?
I think it was the cross between business and technology there. Okay. It felt like there would be some of those soft skills that I felt like I could, you know, harness that were a bit different than the technical skills I was picking up from engineering and just that problem solving base and like marrying them together. So the initial move into that was then looking at consulting and kind of blending technology in there. So did a little internship at Deloitte. Nice. And then I think I interviewed at Blackstone for that internship. Didn't get the internship, but then right after before senior year, I was like, I should just try to see if I can get a full-time job there and see what happens. So took my learnings from my internship and was like, here's why I'm a better candidate now to be full-time.
Totally.
And got the job, which was great.
That's great. That's and what great. Did you do at Blackstone?
I was working in their technology and innovations group.
Oh, nice. I worked there for
I know.
A year.
We have briefly met long time ago.
Okay.
And it was during the intern interview process.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
Someone was like, Brooke went to Penn, and you guys should connect, and all this stuff.
That's so funny. That's why I know. That's definitely why.
It's very, very short.
No, I was like, I can mute Penn or then. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, no, I worked there for a year, too.
Yeah, it was very quick. And you worked with Diaz.
Oh, yeah, I did. Did work with John Diaz. Yeah. Yeah. No, great guy. He's an old boss. My first boss.
Yeah. So my first boss.
I feel like, you know, and he was also a Penn alum.
Yeah.
Oh, lots of connections. No. Okay. This is so funny.
The small world.
I love that. Okay. That's hilarious. I love that. Okay. So you're there for.
I was there.
So you're like in the tech group at Blackstone.
Yeah.
I understand what that means. So you're like kind of a PM.
Mm-hmm. PM, business analyst.
Great.
Working closely with their fundraising, IR teams, and real estate.
Awesome. Okay. And we've also kind of seen this as a big pattern through all the sort of founders that we've interviewed. A lot of people started in corporate and kind of transitioned. How did kind of the skills you learned in more of a corporate sort of traditional finance job, tech job, kind of transition into sort of helping you start your own company, you think?
Yeah, I think there are so many basic professional skills that I just, you know, the first 2 years of right after school. And it's interesting because I also got to have in-person experience, which a lot of people during those COVID years had the remote experience. We even see that with a little gap of when you're hiring people that are like, they don't have the same professional, just base layer. So I think even things like that of what does a professional email look like, or what do team structures look like, or how should you be interacting with a manager? So I think looking at that and thinking about building the company and expanding and hiring and stuff, that was helpful to think about. There were some basic skills also that I was picking up there, like some design skills, some data analytics and things like that that would translate into Pickle. But I would largely say most of what I've learned has been on the job.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, no.
So you're at Blackstone for how many years?
Almost two.
2 years.
Just under two.
Okay. Yeah. So when was the moment that you're like, oh, I need to start something like Pickle?
When... So Brian McMahon is my co-founder, and this was COVID time, so we had all been sent home, and it was an amazing opportunity to be able to start thinking about things outside of work, and we weren't in an office from, you know, 8 to 8 or whatever time that we were typically working. And so you had a little bit more flexibility to start looking at things outside of work. And I remember Brian called me and said, hey, I'm thinking about starting something on the side. I'd love to talk to you about it. And that was the very initial idea of Pickle, which was the full company name is Pickle Poll, because it was a polling app, was the very initial idea of Pickle. And the idea was that we were crowdsourcing opinions from other people and helping them decide what to wear, what to buy, basically injecting social proof into the purchasing process.
Love that.
And so that was our very first idea. And the moment I knew that I would be ready to take that jump was when I was spending any and all of my time outside of the 9 to 5 hours at Blackstone remotely and only working on Pickle Poll at that time. Mm-hmm. And that was also all I was thinking about and interested in thinking about. And so at that point, I knew all my energy was going there. Why not make that jump?
Yeah. And did you work with Brian at work?
Yes, we overlapped there. So he was also in the technology group. We weren't on the exact same team, but we worked super closely on a bunch of projects. So had really great work experience together. We're friends outside of work. So
that's great.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, choosing a co-founder is a really big decision. Yeah. And I think we work so well together. We have very similar understandings of how we'd want to build a team and a company. We are both D1 athletes, and I think there's a lot of that work ethic that we have very similar understandings of. But there are so many founders that will ask me about, how did you pick? And I was like, you better be ready to commit to this. You're never going to leave this person. This is who you're going to be with. It's a very huge commitment. And so we're very fortunate. Like, it's the best person ever. I could not work with anybody else as a
co-founder. How do you think your skill sets balance each other out?
So the way we've split up Pickle has been actually awesome. He is our CEO, and he is also a self-taught software engineer. So he's basically, when we were building the very first version, Pickle Poll, we knew that we wanted to build the app in-house. We didn't want to bring on a third co-founder. We didn't have the money to hire a software engineer. And he kindly volunteered to learn how to code. And I was like, I have some basic design skills. You code, all design. We can build this together. It's great. We don't have to go and shell out money for other people. And it allowed us to be really quick and iterative because we built it all in-house. And so his side is much more of the traditional CEO, finance functions, as well as covering the engineering product org. Because he helped really build that entire initial version of the platform. A lot of what we still have today is built on his initial code, which is amazing. And then my side is growth, community marketing lens, go-to-market, thinking about how we're expanding beyond some of our core markets today.
That's awesome. Are all of your customers women? Do you only have women's clothes?
It's very focused on female fashion. Yeah. So do with that what you will. Anybody can sign up for the platform. So there are some people, whoever prefers female fashion is really who's using it right now. Mostly women. We will at some point expand into men's fashion, but we want to really go deep and focus on women's first.
For sure. I mean, women's fashion is vast majority of the market. Right, vast majority of the consumer buying power, women's buying power is only increasing. Just interesting to have a male co-founder in a very, very focused of female fashion.
Yeah. Industry. I mean, neither of us come from fashion, clearly, right? Sure, we started at Blackstone. We had a different version of the app. And then we had this big pivot. And so all of our expertise was learned on the job.
Wow. So when did Pickle Poll turn into Pickle?
We pivoted in May of 2022. And so we left Blackstone spring of 2021, worked on that app for a year, worked on acquiring users and building out some of that technology and everything. And we were doing a lot of analysis and understanding where is the app actually valuable or where are we losing a ton of people? Because one of those metrics that you're very closely looking at with an app is retention. And so that wasn't fantastic with the Pickle polling version. But we saw some really interesting insights of how people were using polling and recommending things from their own closets. So people would comment on a poll when someone was asking what to buy and what to wear and would say, I recommend this brand from my closet and this is my very favorite item. And even some people were commenting, you could just borrow it from me. You don't need to buy it new. And that was a really interesting concept to look at and understand. And borrowing items is not new, right? The sharing economy has been taking off and we all have borrowed clothes from our sisters and our college friends. But then you get to the professional world and that really halts, except maybe with your immediate roommate when you first move out of school. And so we looked at the rental space. People have done the entire subscription model where they buy and own all of that inventory, but no one's really tackled this peer-to-peer. Mm-hmm. And all of these assets exist in the community and exist in our closets. We don't all need to own them, so why not build something that circulates them? So that was kind of the genesis of Pickle as our rental marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for sure. I mean, it is a crazy thing to think because you do borrow so many clothes, especially as a girl. I mean,
yep.
Like, whatever. Mm-hmm. I lived in a big house with girls growing up, like in college, was in my sorority house, borrowed all types of things. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the professional world, and one, I feel like you're poorer. You have more.
Oh my
gosh,
yeah.
You have more places to go. You have more important places to go, right. Actually. And probably your closets are more similar and have similar needs, and nobody is using it. Mm-hmm. So, but despite sort of this, obviously, like, even though there's a huge rental market, if, like, Rent the One Way obviously spurned a completely new market that continued to grow, the vintage, a secondhand market, were there a lot of doubts with this new business model when you first kind of brought it out? Because it is, like, kind of difficult to logistically and
yes.
to monetize.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, when we were going out into the market, because when we did our pivot, then we were like, we need to raise a pre-seed round of fundraising. And we had a really, really hard time doing that. And there were so many different reasons why we were having a hard time with that. One, we needed to build traction and we needed to show some numbers and show that people were using this product, which is always an interesting chicken and the egg problem because you're thinking, all right, I need to make this grow and work and build it, but we have no money or resources. So what are we going to do? And we just, we were the resources, but
you're bootstrapping. It was tough.
Yes,
it was a tough time.
We'll go into those anecdotes because that was an interesting time. But it was the space was, I think, kind of ready for disruption and the timing of people being really open to secondhand and rental was again like not a new concept. People know what Rent the Runway is and everything. So I think people are like, yeah, I think this makes sense, but are people going to use it? And also building a marketplace from the ground up is really difficult because there's two sides. You have the supply side and the demand side. And so before we can say, everyone go rent things on Pickle, there needs to be things for people to rent. We don't own the inventory, so we're not buying it and listing it. This is coming from other people's closets. So that's the very first initial hard problem to do. And you're often, when you're building a marketplace, you're going to be constrained on one side. Often it's like the supply side, and you're working really hard to grow that and build it. So we did a lot of scrappy things to do that at the beginning. I would go to any and all of my friends' apartments, and I'd be like, we're going through your closet. We're going to take photos of all of your items, and these are going to be some of the first closets on Pickle. We would host some really scrappy professional, and I almost say like professional in quotes, photo shoots in Soho. At the very beginning, we were targeting nano and micro influencers. So thinking of girls that have amazing closets, some excess supply, if you will, of things there ready to be potentially circulated. And the idea was if you get some really beautiful photos, you can use them for Instagram and you can use them for your Pickle closet. So we would tell these girls to come and bring an outfit or two. And I literally was like on the corner of Green and somewhere else in Soho, just with balloons, like green balloons, so that people knew where we were. Yeah. And I had found like an FIT photographer because we didn't have any money to pay a photographer.
Hey, so honestly, those
winters are great.
We literally did our photo shoot, same thing, Columbia intern, $100. It was great. She was fucking fire, honestly.
It was awesome.
It was great. It's so like, good. We love it. Yeah. The Gen Zers.
You want to support the portfolio.
Like, we're supporting up and coming.
Yeah. But there are things like that we're doing just to even build the base of that supply because that is super challenging. And then once you ideally have enough volume there, then you are looking to bring on the demand side and tell people, hey, come check this out and rent, which is still challenging because if you don't have them do that fast enough, the people that are listing all of their items will lose interest because they're not going to start getting making earnings. So it's a very quick problem that you're trying to solve at the same time.
Yeah.
That must be very difficult.
I think it's huge now. Like, I know all the big influencers are on it. You see Pickle everywhere. There's a lot of supply and, of course, demand. How did you kind of, build the following and have users to get on the platform? As we know, like, retention is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
For something like this, how did you start that in the beginning?
We definitely worked the nano micro influencer strategy was really important, and that was because it was helpful to build that base of supply, but it was also helpful because they have some social followings and mm-hmm. people are often following them for style advice and what to wear. And so our idea was they can add a ton of value for us on all aspects of this, and they can start sharing about their experience on Pickle. But I think And that was great. Built some supply. Their network and their community is pretty tight-knit. So those people start, they're all hanging out. They're doing content together. And so they'll start talking about it as well, especially as they started to get some rentals in and out. But I think the true way that we built this was just at the very beginning of making sure that every single customer's experience was as amazing as it possibly could be. And every customer mattered because, mm-hmm. and these were days where I remember in a week, we'd be like, all right, we got 9 rentals last week. Let's do 10 this week. And that is the scale, the small wow. scale of what you start, because you have to start from somewhere, right? Yeah. But if you treat every single one of those really, like, it's so important, all of a sudden you have 50, maybe 100 customers, and those people had a great experience because you took so much care to help them get their rental. And now they're going to talk about it with their friends. And one of the main things that we did at the beginning to help facilitate some of that very hands-on care of our customers was doing all of the Pickle deliveries ourselves. So we knew that when we were launching, we wanted it to be a true extension of your closet, a really convenient way to be able to access other people's items. And so we were like, duh, you have to have these delivered to your door, right? Mm-hmm. But we couldn't afford couriers. We couldn't build out that technology quite yet. Yeah. So Brian and I were the Pickle couriers for like the first 7 months of working on this. And so many benefits of doing that. One, we met every single customer at their door, both the lender and the renter. So I would go to your apartment, like, hi, Brooke, I'm here to pick up your dress for Pickle. I'm going to go deliver it to the customer.
Damn.
And I would ask you about how you heard about us or any feedback you might have about the app or questions that you might have. And so a lot of that was like very manual injection of face-to-face time, but it made the experience great because we had some control over that because we were helping facilitate these rentals initially. And eventually, we were building enough traction that all we were doing all day long was deliveries. There were, I think my maxed out day was like 22 miles on foot.
Oh my gosh.
And then you're running around the subways and everything. So we were maxing out the MTA program where you can do like 12 rides in a week.
Oh, yeah.
We were maxing that out on Mondays.
Wow. I was going to ask if you had a car or something. That's literally crazy. No, you're just huffing it.
Yes, lots of steps.
Lots of steps. No, wow. I mean, that honestly really brings my next question, because I feel like logistically this is very tough, mm-hmm. right? From just a business model perspective, and you guys were able to successfully do it. A big part of your business model is a quick delivery mm-hmm. because you're in a pickle.
Yep.
So in the beginning, obviously you were doing it yourself, which I think this is also a struggle that startups will also see, is in the beginning they have the best customer service you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
This is a huge differentiator. And then as they scale, they obviously can't maintain that.
Yeah,
so how have you been able to kind of maintain that success, that feeling of personalization mm-hmm. as you've grown?
Yeah. I think because we really embedded ourselves in the entire experience from the beginning, that allowed us to build the best technology to try to maintain that really amazing customer experience. So because we did all of those deliveries and we were at people's doors and we were manually communicating with customers, we understood how important it would be for notification timing of understanding when you were going to get your item picked up, or the 2-hour time slot that you would be selecting, or the amount of notifications or reminders that you might need in order to give out your item or receive the item on the other side of things. And so we used all of those learnings to build out technology that works really well for that. And then are continuing to iterate and improve on it. I would also say that we fully did all of the customer support and experience side of things. So after we were able to start, I think we hired like a few couriers at the beginning, and then we started building out the technology that we still have today, or that has been improved since then, of integrating with other courier networks like Uber and DoorDash. And so basically those couriers exist. You deploy them during the 2-hour time slot. It's great. It's very similar to your experience like Uber Eats or DoorDash for food. But while that was happening, then we were there behind the scenes as the full customer support reps. And it was really important because we would hear every single complaint and every single question, any problem that was happening. And so we immediately knew where we needed to fix things in the app, where we needed to improve that experience. And so we also built out the entire function of what our customer support and customer experience team would look like from us being in that situation. So we have an amazing team. We have a customer experience lead that's in New York City in our office. And then we have an amazing offshore team in the Philippines of an amazing devoted support group that works with us, and we can like flex the resources up and down based on volume, which is awesome. And they work so hard. They're so dedicated to what we're working on and building. They very much are part of our pickle team, and everything that they use to be able to like help solve problems comes from those initial days of us doing this ourselves, of talking hand in hand to all of our customers.
Wow, that's super valuable. I feel like as a founder, you need to know all the complaints you get.
It can be hard to hear all the complaints.
I mean, it's rough.
You hear, and it's a small part of the total transaction volume, but it's the loudest part in your brain. And so there, I think that was a big emotional aspect of it, that you're hearing all of the things that were not perfect, even though there was the large majority was having a really amazing experience, but you want 100%.
Yeah, and it's hard to better.
Yeah.
So now you're in New York and LA,
yes.
I believe, right?
Yes.
Okay. What are plans for expansion?
Yes. So our app is actually available across the entire country. So anybody can download it, which is great. And that's actually how we started to see other cities pop up organically. The reason you can do that is because if you aren't renting locally, you can just have an item shipped to you. So that is basically how we started to see other pockets of cities pop up, like LA, when we were really just focused on New York. Mm-hmm. As far as our actual marketing and growth strategy and efforts there, we're very focused on building local communities. So New York and LA is where we're currently very focused. We're going to be working on Miami, which is very exciting, have some cool things coming up in March. And yeah, the LA market has been growing a ton. We've learned so much comparing the ideal customer profile that we see in New York versus the person in LA. We're starting to already understand that and see that in Miami. But it's been great because all of these different markets, and we see this across other places like Dallas and Chicago, they all popped up organically. People started renting from New York closets. People had friends in New York, and it spreads that way, where you can have items shipped out or you have social media that's spreading the word. And so that pocket of LA started popping up over a year ago, and we decided that was a good time for us to kind of double down on it. So now that market's been growing a bunch, and now we're seeing this happening in Miami.
Awesome.
So we're going to go put in some efforts there.
Yeah, that's great. Awesome. I feel like Miami's such a good market because there's always events happening.
Always.
Yeah, and like Fashion Week here, and I'm sure like all over, like
international. They have Swim Week and stuff too.
Yeah, for sure.
It's also like a lot of people who are snowboarding as well are spending time in those cities, and I feel like they may not have their whole closet in one area or the other, or people who go there for a weekend as well, and they're like, oh, I have an event I didn't know.
Totally.
Like, that's a great target.
Yeah, you don't have to pack. You can just ride
around
in Miami. It's perfect.
It's great.
Yeah.
And how does it work exactly with the shipping versus the courier? I mean, that's really difficult. I feel like also, I mean, I'm so impressed by how been able to be, because there's so many, this is a really hard business model. It's like, it's obviously a great idea, it's very sticky, I feel like, once you get there, but it's like, one, how do you encourage people to take photos of their closet? I feel like that's a huge, like, kind of huge thing of work. And how have you seen that sort of increase? And how have you also sort of been able to manage the retention on both sides and been able to be successful?
Yeah, as far as the listing process and everything, I think one thing that we heavily focus on or talk about is people want to see items of you or see photos of you wearing the item. And it's because they understand the fit better. They understand how you're styling it. It'll help convert the rental faster, is just transparently. So we often say just Instagram to pickle. Just take your Instagram feed, take those photos that you're putting up on your story and put them in your pickle closet. And so ideally, you're not really going through your full closet right now and pulling out and trying on and doing a bunch of mirror pictures. Of course, there's some people that are doing that if they're not as much of an Instagram girly or whatever. But just getting that first item uploaded is kind of that initial barrier that you get over. And we see it's cool when people start and they're feeling out their closet, they upload a few items, and then they get a rental and they have this amazing aha moment, because all of a sudden you're like, I just made $50. This is great. I have my drinks paid for that I'm going to for happy hour, whatever that might be. And it's that that moment that people then realize I could actually have a pretty good side hustle on this, and then they upload a ton of other pieces from their closet.
Okay, so it's really kind of getting the first, like, the first rental.
The first rental is definitely important. And then we've done other things to increase the speed of listing. So we have an autofill with AI piece of functionality. So if you add photos, it'll do an analysis, and then it'll autofill most of the fields that you are going to be filling out for uploading an item.
That's awesome. That's really great. Cool.
I know Pickle's been growing a ton over the last few years. You're looking at fundraising. I know you closed your seed in 23 and Series A also now almost. So what are your plans for expansion and growth and scale with this new funding?
Big plans of a heavy part of this fundraising is going to go mostly towards some hiring, expanding the team with a big, big focus on like the product engineering side of things. And the reason that we are doing that is because our customer experience and the product is really our full business. We grow and have grown over 2024 is 85% all organic. That's word of mouth growth, which is amazing. And we want to be able to continue to grow that way. And that really starts from the product itself and the app. So hiring some new engineers, we're going to be hiring a head of logistics. On the growth marketing side of things, we're going to be bringing on a marketing lead that has some expertise in brand voice and positioning and things like that that we just don't have as experts on the team yet. But most of that will be very focused on making sure your experience on Pickle is amazing and magical, and you want to tell all your friends about it because that's how we grow. So that'll be a big part of it. And then expanding to other cities. Miami is going to be a great market that we're very excited about. And we are already seeing some other cities pop up. And so we'll just decide and think about timing. We typically look at a certain volume of products that exist in a market as to when we might look to go then inject some efforts there on like the marketing growth side of things, and then look for a key kind of turning point where that market is really starting to grow by itself.
Very cool. That's awesome.
We're super excited to see it grow.
Yeah. We're excited too.
Really excited. Yeah. That's amazing. And how was your sort of fundraising process? Are you using the same sort of investor from before? Is it a follow on? Did you go to a different investor? What was sort of your process like?
Yes. So stepping back to our seed round of funding, that was in 2023. And that was a long time coming in the sense that we struggled really hard to do a pre-seed round of funding. And we struggled because most of the feedback was we need to see these metrics and these numbers, and we just had to basically build to get there. There were also some people that might not be interested in the exact vertical or exact space. Some people wanted to avoid maybe rental or just weren't investing in marketplaces, whatever that looked like. And so we struggled for a really long time with basically like no money at all throughout most of that year. We had some really big growth moments that happened very organically and were a big turning point for us in that spring leading up into the summer. And we were able to point to all of those metrics, and not just some of those big growth moments, but the retention that we had was amazing. Our investors were super excited about that. And specifically, they were looking at net dollar retention. And that's basically when you get on the marketplace and you use Pickle and you spend money, are you continuing to spend over that year? And the metrics there were great, which was awesome because one, when we were doing some of our fundraising and our deck and everything, we didn't even know at the beginning that that was such an important metric that you should be measuring. Obviously, now we're looking at this like day in and day out and everything, but those retention metrics have continued to be excellent. We've continued to see this amazing organic growth, and it's all very much tied to this great brand love and community-centric platform that we've built. So that gave us really strong growth over the past year, and we're able to close our Series A, or we're in that process, and it has been amazing. We're fortunately going to be able to work with our same investors. So we were going through and working on a fundraising process, getting ready to go out into the market and pitch to a ton of people, and they came to us and they were really excited to do the deal themselves, which was awesome and very flattering. And they are amazing marketplace experts. We work with Craft Ventures, First Mark Capital, and Burst Capital, and all of them have been, you know, we have First Check into Pinterest, we have the founder of StubHub, we have people that have invested and worked with Airbnb super closely and Uber and these other marketplaces. And so we have amazing experts in the room that are helping us look at these amazing marketplaces and seeing how we can then translate some of those learnings into Pickle. So we're very fortunate to be working with them. And yeah, we're just excited to be able to keep building and growing.
Yeah. That's awesome. And congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
In this fundraising environment, super difficult. Huge, yeah, hats off to you, honestly.
Really, yeah. Really
big. Thank you.
I know it's been years of hard work of getting to this place. What's been the most challenging part of being an entrepreneur?
So many challenges. Like, which one should we talk about? Most challenging, I think one of the most challenging aspects and something that you do not really understand until you're in it and you're doing it on the ground is you know it's going to be hard, right? You prepare yourself. You're leaving a corporate job, essentially, or wherever you're coming from. It's probably going to be something more stable than what you're about to do. And you think it's going to be hard and there's going to be sacrifices, but then you go and you are alone. And maybe you have a co-founder. I'm very grateful for Brian. I don't know how people start companies by themselves necessarily. I think it'd be very difficult, but it's isolating. And only you and your co-founder know how difficult it is to be building from the ground up, where most of what's in front of you is going to be a ton of failures before you even get to some of those key milestones that might allow you to raise some capital or hit a growth metric or get your first customer, whatever that might look like. And I did not understand fully the challenges or the sacrifices that you'd make. Because how would you know? I was 23 when I left. So yeah, I knew nothing.
Which is crazy, yeah.
I know a lot more now, obviously. Yeah. But those challenges and also the fact that it's you, and if you're not working, nothing's moving forward. Mm-hmm. And so at the beginning, it's hard because you might try to figure out, you're still figuring out your balance and your prioritization and how you're going to be your own boss and then figure out how you're moving things forward. And anytime you're not doing work, something's not moving forward. And so it's very, very difficult at the beginning, and it requires so many sacrifices, which it has all been very worth it. But that is something that you can't really prepare yourself for until you actually do it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think if it wasn't COVID and let's say you didn't work with Brian, would you have still started something like this, you think?
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I think that I wasn't going to be destined to be on the Blackstone path forever. I don't think that was going to be for me. But, and I think for that, I'm a growth person. I crave that. And I like challenges and I work well under stress. The typical things that you kind of need for it to be an entrepreneur. But the timing was really important. Mm-hmm. And Brian and I working together on this problem has been really important too.
Yeah. Well, I feel like, having a co-founder is super important. I would not be able to do this without Brian.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't know.
You guys know.
I know, yeah, we know. Yeah. We interview a lot of solo founders. Okay, honestly, yeah. We've had a ton of them.
I am so impressed by them. I am just.
Me too. And I think they're in, like, because we focus on female founder teams, there's a lot more female, I think, solo founders than there are. I think probably because maybe they haven't been able to find someone else that, like, is really passionate about a problem that's, like, tends to be maybe female focused. Yeah. Maybe there's just, like, less, you know, like, honestly, like, options within the marketplace and to find someone that they really trust. So it's really great to see that you guys have a really good relationship. I've also, like, as an investor for many years, I've seen a lot of co-founder relationships fall apart.
I know. So, when I hear about the founder breakups, I'm like, oh my gosh.
It's like a marriage. It's honestly like a marriage. It really is. It's like there's some fucking ups and downs, man. Mm-hmm. You gotta be there. You gotta take some vows, honestly, and know that it's unbreakable.
I know.
Because it, like, goes really crazy. And you have to, like, know. So it's really nice you also worked with him before.
Yes.
I think that's really good.
Yes, definitely. We had a taste of it. And then you get into the reality of marriage. But we're so lucky and we work really well together. And we always do. He's engaged now, which is very exciting. They're getting married in September, and his fiance is amazing. But we had to remind people often. We were like, we are not together. We're business partners. So let's not misconstrue that.
That makes sense.
Oh, that's amazing.
I feel like New York also, the consumer tech space has grown a ton over the last few years. Like when we talk about venture, it's always been SF, but now there's a ton of founders and you know, networking community. How do you tap into, like, that community? Do you have, you know, other founder friends that you rely on? What's, like, the scene that you've seen in New York in this space?
I've definitely built more founder friends and connections over probably the past year. I think it's really hard to build or find that community when you're so focused on building your product. And so I'd say that first year before we got that funding, it was really, really difficult to be able to be in that seen as much, even though it's important, because it's important to meet other founders, to ask some questions that you don't want to ask an investor, or you know, talk about some of the different challenges that you're seeing. They're really, really good ways to bounce ideas. But that was one of the challenges. It's very isolating and lonely at the beginning when you're starting a company. And I didn't have a startup network. Blackstone was not a startup network. Very different group of people. And so it's been, you know, saying yes to different like female founder happy hours kind of thing, or just networking that way, or relying on other people that have been some mentors or advisors in your life before. Like my professor from Penn, who leads the engineering entrepreneurship minor and program there, Dr. Castle, he's the best. He was one of the first people that I reached out to, and I was like, I'm leaving Blackstone, and here's what I'm going to go try to build, and saw our first demos and first pitch decks, and connected me to anybody who you could even think of in New York. And some of them were people that were, just lawyer who has a daughter who's working in growth at a startup. And like that kind of connection is just one more person that you have that can, you know, relate to what you're maybe building and working on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we hear this a lot. Like being an entrepreneur, very, very isolating. In the beginning of building a company, even more isolating, because you don't have time to kind of lift your head up and really even try to engage. But it seems like you have a really good relationship with your investors. I feel like that's really special. Could maybe talk a little bit more about that? I feel like in general, as an investor now on the operating side, that relationship can be really toxic and tough. So maybe like how has that been, and how have you been able to find support sort of through that network too?
Yeah, we're very, very lucky. We work super closely with our investors, like bi-weekly meetings type of, and working closely, and we're very grateful for that. And I think advice that we got from, this was another investor really early on, was your investors are your supporting cast, and those are the people, you guys are the main stars and you're the main characters of this production. You're the ones operating day in and day out, and so you are going to, at the end of the day, know more about your business right now than the investors. And so making sure that you have, you know, data-driven decisions and things that you're talking about with your investors, one, you are the person that's actually running the ship. They're going to be there to support you. And I think there's that really amazing dynamic that we have with our investors, where when we ask for help or we are telling them we need, you know, sourcing for this hiring position, or here's our planning or thinking about the fundraise process, they have amazing expertise that they're able to then inject into that. But they are not, you know, breathing down our necks of here's how you should build Pickle, or here's what you should be changing about the product. Of course, we welcome like open brainstorming and stuff, and that's amazing, because sometimes they'll have some amazing ideas that we'll be able to roll out and implement quickly. But, you know, they're here to make us be better operators based on their experience as operators before.
What do you think was like the moment where you thought, wow, like we're actually succeeding? Like this is really like a moment where you took a moment and you're like, wow, this is working. And you felt like, you know, kind of like that moment where musicians hear their song on the radio. What was that for you?
I think there's two different moments that I would talk about. One of the moments was, because people ask a lot about, when did you feel like you had product market fit?
Okay.
Or when did you think the product was like working at all? And I think that moment for me, that was before we got funding. It was when there was a point of all of the challenges and all the times where people would be like, how long are you going to keep doing this when you can't raise money or whatever's going on? Yeah. And the question that you would ask yourself, or I would ask myself, is would anybody care if we didn't exist? And the answer, even if it was only 100 customers, I was like, they would be really disappointed if Pickle didn't exist. And somebody else is going to go do it. If we do not build this, somebody else will, and that would be tragic. So that would keep me going often before we had any of the capital or some external support, because that's a lot of external validation when you get your first check. Because that was a big moment of, oh my gosh, somebody else believes in this as much as we do and as much as some of our early customers do. That's a very big external validating factor. But if that's all you're depending on to keep going, you're going to have a really hard time getting to those bigger milestones. But yeah, when Kraft told us they would like to invest, that moment I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We actually are going to build this. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's huge. That's awesome.
Well, this has been so inspiring. Thank you for sharing your journey with us. We have a lot of listeners that probably are thinking of maybe leaving their corporate job, starting a company. If you had one advice to give to, you know, a young entrepreneur to be, what would it be?
It would probably be, if you are and I'm just reflecting on my time of making that decision, if you are more passionate about this idea or this potential project or company that you are thinking about building, more passionate about that than maybe your current 9-to-5 job, if you're thinking of and willing to put in the sacrifices and the effort and everything, take that risk and make the jump. Be ready to go all in. Don't half-ass it. Like, don't say, I'm going to go work on this a little bit on the side. Set yourself up so that you can try to really go for it. Put all of your effort into that. You might have to pivot. You might have to adapt. That's okay. That is very normal. That'll happen. But if that's how you feel about your idea or your project and you're willing to dedicate yourself to it, go do it. And what I would tell myself is, like, the worst thing that could happen is it's a really good interview story to go back to corporate America. And, you know, I don't – hopefully I'm never going back to corporate America. But
I don't think you are anymore.
That's what I told myself. Okay. When I was leaving, I was like, I could make it a good interview story.
Right, yeah. You can always go back. Right. It'll always be there.
There will be people that will hire you if you're willing to take that risk.
Exactly.
And 100%. Try to build something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. 100%. I mean, it is, like, great, great experience no matter what. You'll be able to bond with an entrepreneur no matter what as
well. The learning curve. Like, I've learned more in the past, I guess it's been 4-ish years or whatever, then I don't even know how many years it would have taken me to learn what we've been working on. So. Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming, Julie. This was really incredible.
Thank you for having me. It's so really nice inspired. To reconnect.
Of course. I know. We have so many crossovers.
I know. We're like, we can play the name game forever.
Yeah, no, literally. Yeah. Where can we find you?
Yes. So if you haven't tried out Pickle, you can download the app. It's free to download on the App Store. And then just to follow along for really cool updates and things that we're working on, we do a lot of community initiatives. Definitely check out our Instagram. It's at Shop on Pickle.
Okay, awesome. Great. Amazing. Shop on Pickle when you're in a pickle.
Yes. Exactly.
Thanks. So if you have any questions, always reach out to us too. womensplainpod1@gmail.com. And we're on womensplainpod at all of our socials as well. And thank you so much, Julia, for coming.
Thanks for having me.
And this is amazing. So nice. Appreciate it. Pickle. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening.